Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 27th June, recording at 9:51 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights for the week for stock markets. Well, it was pretty well unrelentingly grim news, including today with Wall Street leading markets lower, and the only partial holdouts were some of the resources markets. Long-dated government bonds against that background were quite firm. The U.S. dollar has weakened this week. Precious metals have firmed. Metals were generally steadier. Copper, probably the leader among the industrial metals, currently showing at 385.85 on the spot month position. Gold, well, I won't give many prices here, but gold bullion is currently at 928. It's up nearly $11. And the grain and bean complex had been in a gentle retreat, which without any dynamics looked like a consolidation. And they bounced back in the last 3 days to the higher side of their ranges. Most of the agricultural commodities are firm. But the big story has been crude oil, and that broke up to new all-time highs and reached $142.99 today before backing off. It's currently trading at 140.63. In after-hours trading, that's still at 99 cents on the day. Okay, so what's going on here generally? Well, the Wall Street leash effect, which has always exerted a strong pull on markets, particularly on the downside, has certainly been doing that recently. But most stock markets, well, let me stick with Wall Street for a moment. The Dow and the S&P have been heading lower really since mid-May, and it's been an unrelenting decline. And we had holdouts in terms of the transport index and the NASDAQ index, but they've capitulated here more recently and at least breaking their short-term upward trends. And among the other firmer markets, well, Japan was doing extremely well until very recently, but as I've said, it can't do it on its own, and it's broken its progression of rising lows. It's well above its March low, but the point is the pattern has deteriorated, along with so many others. Again, as I said, the resources markets have been the best holdouts here. Canada is outstanding among developed country resources markets. Russia and Brazil among the developing country markets, very firm by comparison, although Brazil has pulled back to the upper side of its trading range, and we've seen a bit of a pullback in Russia recently. But the overall patterns are just so much better than the rest of the world, where we see indices moving towards their lows for the year, and some have broken through those lows for the year, including India. Now, so what are the factors at play here? Well, I mentioned the Wall Street leash effect, but why is Wall Street heading down? Well, an important reason, of course, is because lead indicators, the banks, broke downwards quite some time ago, and that certainly set off some alarm bells. And those banks have continued weak, and I've always maintained that what's good for the banks is usually good for the rest of the market, and vice versa. So those problems, although I don't doubt that, well, I was going to say, I'll stick to that. I don't doubt that the worst of the credit crisis is behind us. The fact is it's still unfolding, and it's still unfolding because the banks have been less than forthright in their disclosures. So they've held back a certain amount of information, or worse still, they weren't sure exactly how bad a position they were actually in. They have said things are okay and then come back for more money. You know the story. I won't repeat and don't need to repeat all of that. But the crucial point is that those bank indices in the USA, in the UK, in continental Europe, and some other regions are still heading down. Now, this is not a global problem. It's primarily a Western problem, but it continues. So that is certainly an ongoing factor. But the really big story here is the oil price, because that was moving up very strongly in May and also carrying on in June, as you know. And it's hit a new high today, as I mentioned in my introduction. So we have an oil shock. And then we also have the food prices, the soaring food prices. And just when it looked, well, shortly after, it looked as if they had peaked following their upward accelerations in February. Rice peaked later in the cycle, but when it looked as if we had seen peaks, then we got the appalling crop news out of the U.S. With all the cold weather and particularly the flooding that has so damaged the corn and soybean crops. So that's given a new twist to the food price inflation story, and indeed agricultural commodities. Well, they've been, along with energy, they've been the top performing sectors. So that's a problem. We have central banks in tightening mode, and where they can't tighten, they talk tightening, or at least until this week. I was thinking of the Fed, of course. And higher interest rates, rising interest rates, are always a headwind for global stock markets. And then we have the global deleveraging that's taking place. And we also have the downgrades in corporate profits, and I don't doubt that those are going to continue as global GDP growth slows. Well, if that isn't enough to get people to stand in the window ledge, what else would be required? As I said, it does sound like a perfect storm. Then we have to stand back and say, well, okay, that's a very hostile environment for equities. What else can we say about it? Well, stock markets, depending on which ones you look at, a number of them that have been leading on the downside have been weak, really, for the better part of a year. And they've seen some fairly hefty declines. Now, they can always get more hefty declines. But we have a lot of the current problems are factored in. Now, people can debate all week whether or not that's the case or not. And I'd say, well, look at the technical evidence. Let's take a market such as China. That's seen a very big fall. When you get a market that falls 50% and still is a high growth economy and likely to remain a high growth economy, I would be very careful about going on with all the extrapolations that we're seeing in terms of general economic bearishness for China's growth outlook. In other words, when China was moving upwards, there were a lot of people cheering that this was the great emerging economy, soon to become the strongest economy, the biggest economy, rather, was already the strongest, become the biggest economy in the world, probably within the next 20, 25 years. Then China decides to deflate its property bubble and, to a lesser extent, its stock market bubble, and does so quite successfully. But yet sentiment has changed so much that people are saying that the China story is over, kaput. Say the same thing about India. Well, I don't buy into any of that. What is real is that we have scary problems. The resources problem, I think, at this stage is worse than the banking problem. But certainly, these are very serious short-term concerns. Now, on the other side of the coin, as I said, we have seen substantial adjustments in stock markets. We've also had bearish sentiment to a degree that sentiment indicators have fallen back to quite bullish levels, and I've commented on those a fair amount recently. Now, the trouble with that is that which is going to be more important, a sentiment indicator which is giving similar readings to what we've seen at previous market bottoms, or a spike in the oil price? Well, without any hesitation, I will suggest that I will say that unequivocally, the spike in the oil problem is more bearish than attractive sentiment readings are bullish. So I'm wary. Normally, I'd be cock-a-hoop over the sentiment indicators, but not while crude oil prices are hitting new highs, and not while food prices are, in many cases, hitting new highs, because that means more inflation in the pipeline, and some central banks have already acted fairly aggressively to counter that, and may do so further. So how do we get out of all this? Well, an oil shock would certainly crimp growth quite sharply. And the thing about the energy and food prices today, which are still soaring, is why is that actually happening? Well, the main reason in terms of supply and demand is not so much demand, but it's the supply. And any threat to oil production produces additional buying. Any evidence of crop damage produces surges in the food prices. And we have also had a lot of investor participation in those markets, because that's the only performing area, or that's the main performing area, at least. So these factors have combined to push prices higher. But the oil shock and the high food prices and their impact on consumer spending is very likely to create some deflationary pressures not all that far down the road. Now, these terms get bandied around so much that one always needs to qualify. I emphasized, look back a few years, I kept saying over and over again that people were exaggerating the deflationary risk earlier in this decade, and people were still doing so in 2003, 2004, and even beyond. I said we had an inflationary risk. Well, now everybody's concerned about inflation, and rightly so. It's been building a long time, but the point I'm trying to emphasize here is that it's supply bottlenecks or crop problems that are causing most of this, plus some speculation and investment, that are causing most of the more recent gains in overall prices, and demand will fall back. So really, this will sort out part of the problem, and relatively soon, if not in a matter of weeks, in a number of months. Meanwhile, stock market valuations are much more attractive, and that's even allowing for more corporate downgrades. So this isn't It's AME. It still has the elements of a perfect storm as far as the short term is concerned, but I think that the point I'm trying to make is that investors will look across this crevasse here and see an environment where central banks, the more some central banks have pushed up interest rates, the more they'll be able to cut them. Now, what about the US? The US economy is going to remain weak for a really long time, in my view. That's not a hard forecast to make, because how could it be otherwise? You have the very, very weak domestic sector of the US economy. Consumer spending's not going to pick up anytime soon. The consumer is maxed out on borrowing, as we know. The house is no longer an ATM because prices are in retreat. The cost of borrowing for consumers has soared, although it's gone down for banks as they attempt to recapitalize, but they're certainly not giving any money away cheaply to their customers. The headwinds are very strong in the US economy. And there is a good point as far as the Fed is concerned, is that there's very little chance that the resources inflation and the inflation in the US from the weak US dollar, which pushes up export, I beg your pardon, pushes up import prices as other countries are forced to pass on some of their cost increases. This makes for a very tough environment for the US consumer, and that's still a huge chunk of the US economy. It's at least 70% of the US economy. Now, on the other side, we do have the US exporters and multinational companies. They're doing quite well. And that's what's helped to keep the economy out of recession so far. But again, the point I want to emphasize is that there's very little chance of the US economy recovering quickly. I think it'll be a very slow process. That's why all these talks of higher Fed rates, I think, are wide of the mark. And if the Fed did decide to raise rates, I'll bet it would have to reverse that increase for very, very quickly, and just because it would weaken the economy still further. Now, a lot of people feel that that's a serious problem for resources. We have seen otherwise, in the sense that the global infrastructure story is still very powerful. And I think that will remain an excellent place to be invested. It doesn't mean that shares in that sector don't get buffeted in the sort of turbulence that we're seeing right now. But it's an outstanding sector. What about China with all of its exports to the US? Well, China hasn't exactly been blindsided by these developments. It's seen it coming. And yes, of course, that means slower exports, fewer exports to the USA and also to continental Europe, which is also slowing. But China has been developing its domestic economy for quite some time. So I think my hunch is that China will come out of this a lot stronger than most people think. And ditto India. India is not anywhere near as dependent on exports to the USA. What India just needs is sufficiently good governance to keep developing its domestic economy. And I am confident that India will do that. It'll always be a volatile market, but I would say that among top Indian corporations now, that their managements are world beaters. We saw this back in the early 1980s with Japan, that they had some of the best management in the world, and the US found, to its chagrin, but it was, and that it had to relearn some management principles, or learn some new management principles from the Japanese. And I think the same thing will happen in terms of Indian companies. But I don't want to digress too much here. There's too much ground to cover. So again, going back to stock markets, tough period here. It's not over, and I think we have to assume that although stock markets are somewhat overstretched on the downside, although there are some there is evidence of therefore short-term oversold conditions, although sentiment indicators are back at very interesting levels, I don't think that's enough to really alter the weight of the energy price spike that we're seeing, and also the food inflation and the anti-inflation talk from central banks. So I once again, I'm in a position of saying I don't see the catalyst for a strong recovery. I could be pleasantly surprised next week, but something has to happen that people aren't currently discounting for that to take place. Again, in terms of technical background to the market, weak chart patterns, we know that. We also know that short interest is very high, pretty well around the globe, where people can sell short, and that's in most markets. Today's short positions are tomorrow's, a good chunk of tomorrow's buying power. But again, there's no catalyst for those shorts to cover in here right now, rather than run those positions. Also, a lot of investors have high cash levels, so that's a future source of fuel. Neither of those factors, heavy short covering or cash coming out of or going back into the stock market, neither of those factors is going to come into play without a catalyst. And again, I don't know what that catalyst is going to be. What about crude oil? Well, having broken upwards, it would now need to break below 130 to take out the last low, and 120 is the next important level on the downside. If we saw 120, I think we would have clear evidence that a medium-term correction was underway and a good chance of going back at least temporarily below the $100 level. But the trouble is, as I mentioned before, is that crude oil is today right up here at all-time highs above the $140 level. So what it has done is reaffirm the overall upward trend, which has been remarkably consistent. That's why I can be precise about the levels at which we would see evidence of a deterioration. Government bonds are getting flight to so-called quality. It isn't quality at all, as you know, not at these yields, particularly the U.S. Treasuries. We always get this knee-jerk reaction. And as long as stock markets are weak, we'll probably see firm bond prices. But the moment we commence a rally of more than a day or two, we will see, I think, those bond prices come down, bond yields back up once again. Now, in terms of currencies, I've never bought into this strong dollar hypothesis that a lot of people have been talking about. What I did buy into early on, following the dollar's overextended decline down to its lows on the U.S. dollar index, I said that I felt that we would go into a ranging phase, and we're still in a ranging phase, and I do expect that to be continued. But there is a good risk that we will see new lows for the dollar on its U.S. dollar index, even if it is in a bottoming out process, and I have real doubts about that. Technically, I can see why it might be in a bottoming out process. Economically, I really struggle with that one. I don't see why the dollar should be bottoming out in here at all. So I expect this ranging, at best, the ranging so far has had an upward bias, which has encouraged the bulls, understandably. We've had gradually higher highs and gradually higher lows within an essentially ranging pattern. But this is a moment of truth here for the dollar bulls because you get another day, another moderate down day for the US dollar index, and it'll be breaking that progression of higher lows. And that would certainly lead to some additional commodity price inflation, I suspect. Precious metals. One really does need to have an investment in precious metals. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm contradicting myself, but I have let my futures positions out into the strength. You know, my policy has been to nibble on the weakness and then to trade them out on the rallies. And I'm currently all square in precious metals and hoping for a bit of a pullback within the range. That would be in line with the normal seasonal pattern for precious metals and also the medium-term chart formations where precious metals have tended to get their best runs in the fourth quarter of the year and the first quarter of the new year, and then pull back in fairly lengthy consolidations. But I will have sold too soon if we get the dollar herring down to test its lows or further. I have other investments in gold, largely through shares and funds, but I will be a buyer on any weakness in bullion as I have been before. And I think the sector looks good, at least while oil, which is a big psychological influence on gold right now, as long as the oil price is staying above 140, we're going to see generally firm precious metals overall. And industrial metals, well, we mentioned one point, though, on gold that did concern me. Might have influenced me on a sale of a futures position here today. Not a short sale, but selling a long position. I saw somebody talking on CNBC that gold should be at $6,000 and it might even go to $10,000. Well, the fact is, here it is at 927, and his answer to that was, well, that was all due to manipulation. Well, I don't really buy into that. Yes, central banks don't want the gold price to go up that much. Yes, central banks have been doing some selling. And one bit of selling, well, the man who was talking about $10,000 for gold, was saying that central banks were running out of gold to sell. That's not entirely true, although the European central banks have sold their positions down very, very substantially. But remember, the IMF announced that it would be selling some gold. So that's a little news item that can pop up anytime and lead to a $50 reaction or more, depending on where gold is at the time when it actually occurs. So, although I remain a big long-term bull of gold, and I really have been since 2001, I want to keep my feet on the ground and keep my eye on the charts. In the very short term, gold's rallied up to the higher side of its range, but it would really need to sustain a move above 950 to convince me that it was going to run again at what is not normally a period of seasonal strength. But again, a repeat, I'll be a buyer if I get the chance on a setback within the range. I'll be a buyer once again. The agricultural commodities, I went back into corn again today. I had been away on the day that informative email arrived, and that Owen posted that was last Wednesday. So I've come in a little high in here on this very bad news. That's a highly speculative position I've taken. I'm going to keep it relatively small. I also have the coffee, but the commodities are still the performing area in here, needless to say. And I think that's pretty much it for another week. So I'll just say all the very best to all of you.